Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here this morning to our session where we'll be talking about Work Train, a new program for training low-income people for jobs that are open in the community. First, though, I want to remind you that we are coming up on March, and March is when we start celebrating the 50th anniversary of Thursday Morning Roundtable. So keep that in mind. Over the coming month, 4 weeks, we're going to be having a series of programs that actually mirror the programs that Lee Smith and the founders of TMR put together in March of 1965. And we're going to start out next week with a talk by Mayor Miner on issues and challenges from the vantage point of City Hall, a talk that William Walsh gave in March of 1965. I have a feeling that there will be some similarities and differences. Unfortunately, we don't have the recording, because those early programs were not recorded by WCNY as we are today, and there wasn't a scribe, but I think we could probably look at the newspaper reports of the time and guess what some of those issues might have been. So, very interesting. Come, as always, prepared to ask excellent questions. Speaking of questions, we have a number of guests here today. Once our panel is done with their remarks, we'll have time for questions and answers. I do ask that you keep your questions in the form of a question and keep them brief. And raise your hand, and I will try to make note and make my way around the room. So, today, as many of you know, the Citizens League, the Onondaga Citizens League, a sister organization of TMR, has been studying the employment skills gap in Central New York over the last year or so. So, the basic question was, there seem to be a lot of employers in the region who say that they have job openings and they can't find workers. And similarly, there seem to be workers or potential workers who say they want to find jobs, and we haven't been able to find the match. Obviously, the issue is a lot more complex than that, but in essence, the answers seem really simple. Let's match them up, okay? Obviously, it's the implementation that's the problem. Well, today we're going to be talking about one of those initiatives that is attempting to bridge that gap. And we have with us Meg O'Connell, who is the executive director of the Allen Foundation and also chair of the Work Train Collaborative, Dominic Robinson of Center State CEO, who's the director of Work Train, and Frank Lazarski, president of United Way of Central New York, which is one of the partners in the collaborative. So take it away, panel. Thank you.
Frank, start.
Good morning. It's a pleasure for me to be here this morning to be with so many familiar faces and friends of United Way and so many people that do such good work here in the community. The last time I was here was in September of 2013, and at the time I was with our board chair, Greg Lowe from Eric Maurer and Associates, and Rebecca Bostwick. Sorry, I just saw Rebecca Livingood. Hadn't seen her in a while. Rebecca Bostwick. And Rebecca is from the Lerner Center and is chair of our Community Impact Cabinet. And we were here presenting to you the survey that we had just completed in 2013 about the needs of our community, the trends, the priorities that we were seeing emerge. And three of those areas that we talked about were education, housing, and employment. And at the same time, we were revisiting and enhancing our strategic plan. And we're talking about not only the types of programs you all are familiar with and the agencies, many of whom today are here, that we fund, but we were also talking about creating a new community initiative, a collective impact initiative, if you will. And the area that we focused on was employment. And so today we're here to tell you some 18 months later kind of how we're doing with that. Some background, though, as to why we chose that. And we're really talking two groups of people that we were hearing from. First of all, the businesses and the employers that support United Way. United Way is still supported by workplace campaigns for our total income for about 85% of our dollars come still from workplace campaigns. And as you know, a lot of that has shifted over the years. You've heard me talk about that before. But the businesses that supported us, the employers, were talking about the inability to find workers today, inability for them to grow and compete because of lack of skilled workers. They were talking about the things that we've all heard before, about the lack of professionalism, about the lack of that work ethic that so many of us learned when we were probably pretty young, the dependability, taking initiative, problem solving, those kind of soft transferable skills that they were seeing weren't there with their workers. And they felt also as a region, we were hampered by that. At the same time, we were talking about the people that need services. And in our community right now, it's no secret to you that because of the higher poverty rates that we have, the higher unemployment rates, we have a lot of people that we attribute that the need for services to those two things. And the need is not only greater, but it's more complex. And so we looked at those two things and we said, you know, if we can work with individuals to begin to stabilize at least part of their lives by bringing in some money to them, some income, some wealth to be able to help manage some of the other things in their life, that probably will help diminish at the end of the day, or in the long run, some of the need for services in our community. You know, in our community right now, about a third of our adult population lives in poverty, and 50% of those younger than 18 live in poverty. And it's no secret, again, that you read articles all the time about what's happening here in our community. One of the things that we talked about was the issue of needing a post-secondary education or training. And if you go back way back when, we found a statistic in 1973 that said 28% of the people, in order to get jobs, need some sort of additional post-secondary education or training. Today, or toward the end of this year, 62% of them will need some sort of additional training besides a high school diploma. And nearly 50% of the adults in our region, nearly 50% have no additional training besides a high school diploma. So you can see that we've got to do something different. And so what we said is, look, we're going to fund our traditional types of programs in four areas, but in this area of employment, we're going to carve out $100,000, commit that for the next 3 years, and say, let's go out and let's seek some partners to join us in this collective impact effort. One of the things you're going to hear, I think, Dominic talk about is a dual client approach. And this was one of the tipping points for us in finally making this decision, was that we felt if we did this, we could not only be serving those people that come to us or through the agencies for services, but also those employers that support us. So we love this notion of a dual client approach in growing this notion horizontally rather than the narrow approach we had of just working with the service recipients. And so we know people want to work. We think that this will, in the long run, jobs will help people have a less need for services. And so with that commitment, we went out to seek some other partners in the community, and one of them happened to be my friend Meg O'Connell from the Allen Foundation. And I'm going to turn it over to Meg now for some remarks.
So workforce development, whatever that big term means, isn't something new that our community has addressed. And I actually have to kind of really give credit. In 2008, this concept of doing workforce development in a different way was presented by the National Fund for Workforce Solutions. It's a national organization, national funders that put a ton of money into looking at this. And in 2008, they actually came to Syracuse, and Peter Dunn and John Eberle were a big part of trying to take what they were offering and some of their programs and think about how we could implement them in Syracuse. Unfortunately, what happened in 2008 is we really didn't have an identifiable workforce development structure that they could really hook into. And so we didn't become part of a whole trend across the country where the National Fund selected site cities. In the meantime, though, after that kind of phased out, my buddy Dominic started Northside Up. And Northside Up got support early on as a sponsor of Center State CEO with Catholic Charities as well as St. Joseph's Hospital, funding from the Ford Foundation to really pilot a program. Bill Magnarelli gave some money as well, to pilot a program to really develop a platform for how you work with employers and how you get people jobs and the skills that they need to get and retain those jobs and hopefully move up within a pathway in some way. So fast forward now to last year, 2014, Northside Up and this program HealthTain and GreenTrain, which they have now piloted and done very successful and have wonderful outcomes in terms of retention and job placement. The Ford Foundation money is kind of ended and we're like, okay, how can we now sustain this or bring this to scale? And that is kind of where this whole work train came together. And we applied to be part of the National Fund, which had come to us in 2008, to become a partner site for the National Fund, which we were accepted into, and Work Train was born from that. Now, what about Work Train? Dominic's going to give you a really great overview of it, but I think what's really important is to know, and as you can imagine as funders, we don't want to duplicate anything in the system. We already have some really good workforce programs that are going, but this is very unique and it augments our efforts. It's not to replace what's already going on. And it's also important to know that Dominic and I talk about his kind of team, they're not an agency. We are not creating a new agency. They work under Center State CEO, which was important for us to align it with the business community. And it's very important that they are really what you would think of as a catalyst for change. We like to say they're a nimble team that are trying to change and build efficiencies and better effectiveness within the system. I think you'll also know that it's a very, it's a platform for a lot of collaboration. We have a lot of vertical people doing their great programs and how they integrate, but it is meant to be very much trying to cross over some of those silos. And it's also not something that is going to solve all of the unemployment issues for every person in our community who needs a job. This is a very, we're taking kind of a narrow swath of people and trying to put them into jobs and pathways. So I think you also have to be really clear that it's not going to be applicable to everyone. CNY Works, you know, serves everyone. Jobs Plus serves everyone. You know, this is really a much more narrow, and Dominic's going to talk about that, but that's also how it kind of differentiates and why it doesn't duplicate what's also going on. So the funders that came together for this, to just mention the Allen Foundation, the Central New York Community Foundation, the Gifford Foundation, Bob Falter from the Reisman Foundation, and the United Way, committed over $1 million for the next 3 years for this. We are also trying to leverage additional funding for that. We have also gotten some money out of ESD from a wonderful, our friend Al Sturpe, a $600,000 grant over 3 years. The National Fund, we became a site, and almost 3 months later, they awarded us a grant of $100,000 for some of the work that we're doing. We also have received money from OCDC, a grant over 2 years, and we're waiting to hear on some pending CDBG money. We also, I think, key to what I said about WorkTrain, it's not an agency, but it's a partner working together, worked really closely with OCC on their TACT grant, which was great. And we are also just continuing to make sure that we are not starting something that we don't want to continue to make sure we can fund and have going. So you have behind you what this work train looks like. And I'm going to just do 30 seconds and give it to Dominic. So the way that the way that this is structured, and these are initiatives, like I said, we are one of the National Fund sites across the country. You have Boston Skills, Cleveland, Cincinnati. Every city is doing work similar to this dual client model that Frank mentioned. And in most cases, you just have the funders that serve as the board. In our case, we kind of recognize that in addition to those funders who are kind of listed in our community, we needed also to have the buy-in of all the other key partners. So you will see up there CNY Works, Southwest Community Center, someone from the county, someone from the city, of course, OCC and MACNY. And so the model here is that you have this steering committee that meets and drives these initiatives. You have Dominic and, again, and his staff and his really great nimble team. And then under that, you create industry partners within specific industries. I mentioned it started as HealthTrain, partnerships with St. Joe's and Catholic Charities on the north side. But you also then can go into, we are also looking at manufacturing industry partnerships as the second key area where there are always constantly you hear people saying we have jobs and we can't find the people to fill those jobs. Community partners play a key role. By community partners, we mean CBOs, right? Community-based organizations. Because most of the people, one of the reasons why that they're not able to get on that ladder and get jobs is because they do need either some level of soft skills, but also some level of, it could be ESL, it could be anything else, to be able to get them to essentially be work ready. So that's the role that the community partners play, and they do such an excellent job with. And of course, educational partners. As Frank referenced, even if you can get someone a job, if they just have a GED, that's not going to get them very far. How do we get them to start to work with SUNY EOC to get the skills they need and eventually onto OCC, if that's their pathway? And then also part of this is a partner council. So that the people, we didn't want a huge steering committee, but there are many people in this community who are working in the workforce area that are key to making this successful. And so they serve on our partner council. So with that said, Dominic Robinson does serve, as Sandra mentioned, as the executive director of WorkTrain, and again, is really kind of the, I want to say, I can't say brain child, but the brain adult behind trying to drive this initiative in our community, and is just, has been such a passionate force from this, recognizing, as I think he loves to say, that that what people, and I think what we're all about, is the fact that we always look at poverty, and we look at issues with poverty, as he likes to say, and I think Terrence started, the idea that it's an economic condition, but we don't look at it in ways that how do you solve it from an economic perspective. So it's an economic condition that needs an economic solution. So with that, you go.
Thank you. Yeah, that is we have to give credit to Terrence Burdell here, the newest member of our team who's working out of Southwest Community Center, but he said that to us a few months ago, and it essentially summarized almost our entire organizational philosophy of, you know, poverty being an economic condition, yet oftentimes without economic solutions. So it's a really great way to frame this work. What I want to talk a little bit about is just what WorkTrain is all about, what it is and what it isn't. I think that we have the great opportunity to build on a lot of great work that we've done at a pilot level, at a grassroots level, in our Green Train and Health Train programs at Northside Up. Many of you have heard about those in this room. And those are things that are totally informing this work moving forward. Yet, at the same time, our work isn't necessarily going to just be a pure replication of those programs. It's gleaning from those models to take something to scale. So I think we really want to help you wrap your head around what that means. And frankly, we're still trying to wrap our heads around what it means right now, but it's pretty exciting. The other thing I just want to say is that it's a pretty amazing feeling for me to have started this work 8 years ago in a small, very grassroots session context, and to be first supported by St. Joe's and to be adopted by a Center State CEO and kind of incorporated into our regional economic development strategy, and to have the issues of improving distressed communities and improving the quality of life for low-income individuals suddenly become part of our regional strategy and become part of the agenda of our anchor institutions. That was really exciting. And then to do that work and to see good things come from it, but then to have our community rally around it and our funders rally around it and to kind of get to take that to the next level, it's crazy for a guy who started off doing community organizing. It's pretty exciting to kind of be in this position now and to think we're actually affecting change in a way that has an opportunity to make real impact. So thank you to Frank and to Meg for their leadership and their support in that, and all the other funders and all the other partners that have gotten us here. Literally, impossible without everyone who's been involved. Talking a little bit about WorkTrain, what we asked ourselves when, we started talking to Frank and Meg and the funders about this initiative, what is it that made our pilot programs, Green Train and Health Train, so successful? And there's a lot of things, and we'll kind of talk about those things and how they apply more broadly, but it starts with this, the dual client model. The bottom line is this, is that if I'm a neighborhood-based community organizer like I was, my interest is in getting the low-income individuals in my community jobs. That is my job, right? That is the most important thing I can do to make that community better, is to build its capacity from the ground up. The kind of slight twist of irony in that is that the best way to do that is to serve employers' needs, is to become, to create exceptionally high value to the employers in our region who are willing to potentially take a chance on those people. And so when we look at the dual client, we're really talking about two sets of cohorts, if you will, who we are trying to create great value for. And when we first will start with employers. So we're going to start with priority industries. Those are industries that have persistent and challenging labor demands. So that these are demands that either they're facing high rates of turnover, or they're seeing large amounts of growth, and they don't fill all the positions. In some cases, like in some manufacturers around here, you see business stagnating because they can't get enough quality workers in the door. They can't retain them effectively enough. We've talked a lot to the hospitals that we've worked with over the years, where they're at 100% occupancy in their bed count, and they are just bursting at the seams. And if they're experiencing turnover at any level of their staff, or if they're not able to hire up to their full capacity, it affects quality of care. So basically, finding industries where you have large aggregated employment opportunities and employers who are willing to help because it's aligned with their interest. We do want to identify those in industries, and ideally those employers who are willing or able to hire people in a way that would put them on a career pathway and advance them into living wages. We recognize that when you're dealing with on and underemployed, oftentimes low-skilled individuals, the middle-class job isn't a reality immediately. It's that we want to be able to offer not just a flash-in-the-pan opportunity for someone. We want to show them a pathway where there is a real opportunity for success on the back end. So we target industries that allow for those opportunities in various ways. And we also want industries where there's at least a critical mass of employers who are willing to collaborate, who are saying, yeah, we're willing to try something different. We're willing to do something that ultimately might not make a lot of sense to us right away, but we know it's important to solve this problem. And if you're willing to bring resources to bear, so are we. When you talk about the individuals we're committed to, I like to say that more or less we are population agnostic. We are interested in taking those in our community, and right now we kind of are defining our community as this county, and we think that could grow over time based upon some interest and feedback we've been getting from others. But we want to target those people who are either unemployed or underemployed, meaning that they have low wage, low skill, oftentimes dead end jobs, who face for whatever reason barriers to placement, retention, and advancement. So that could be because of an educational attainment level that is lacking. It could be because of some challenging factors in their life due to just the realities of poverty. It could be because they've been working their whole lives in one profession, and that profession has kind of dried up, and now they have to switch professions. And Lord knows I would not welcome that opportunity at this stage of my career. So I think that any of those circumstances could essentially qualify someone for our interest. And the only reason we can be kind of population agnostic is we're working with so many different partners who are serving so many different populations, and we'll talk about that more later. But what's really important is about this whole model is that it's really about creating alignment. It's around drilling into the very, very, very specific needs for employers. We'll ask them, okay, well, what do you need? Where are your pain points? As we go around and we do employer interviews, we kind of aggregate demand. We say, oh, look, there is a critical need for production technicians in manufacturing. All right, well, let's now start really drilling into that, because it seems like that's actually an attainable position for many of the people we're trying to serve. So let's create a candidate profile that is driven by the employers, where we look at everything from character traits in that individual to their aptitudes, competencies, the skills they need, and any certifications they might need, put that together, turn to our community partners, and use that to help them refer candidates. And then we build an educational intervention, and we build wraparound supports that are designed to lead directly to those jobs that we've identified with employer buy-in and employer feedback. And we want the services and the supports that are going to help the candidates we're most interested in helping get there. So it's not just about, oh, look, we tailored this great program for you. It's about, where are we offering it? Is it in a location that's geographically accessible to you? Is it embedded with things like, vocational ESL? Are there wraparound services that are helping you create financial stability in your life, that are helping take care of childcare, your transportation? All those things are going to be critical to fostering success. And so those are the puzzles that we try to fit together to create an alignment within the dual client model. You can look to some of our experiences in the past to see how it works. We've seen in the Green Train program, we said, hey, there's going to be this big construction boom on the north side. We were responsible for helping get a lot of development projects teed up. We were working with St. Joe's. It was about to kick off a $250 million expansion. We said, we know there's going to be construction jobs. There was just a huge weatherization grant that had come through the legislature at that time, statewide, and we also, this was at the, in the as the stimulus was starting to get developed. So we started going around and talking to all the employers, the general contractor for the St. Joe's expansion, a lot of small employers who we saw doing work in the neighborhood. We said, what do you need? Based upon that, we developed a priority list of skills and all those other soft skills that we thought we needed. We said, well, who do you turn to now? And almost everyone said, in that case, BOCES. So we went to BOCES, Mario Clay, who's here somewhere, and Bob Leslie at the time. Mm-hmm. Hi, Mario. And we said, this is what we're hearing. And they turn to you. But we also feel like right now your program's 6 months long. It's kind of expensive for our population, and it's located out in Liverpool. They worked with us to create a 12-week program that was specified to the things we were hearing from employers in a curriculum that was very accessible to our population that combined a lot of life skills, soft skills, whatever you want to call them, and the hard skills. We translated, and then we also were able to get a Syracuse City School District adult ed instructor to do adult ed and an ESL, kind of vocational ESL, in the classroom in tandem. We brought in Cooperative Federal Credit Union to do financial literacy to make sure people were able to manage their money once they started getting it. We brought in all the kinds of wraparound services that people might need. And so what we created was this very cohesive model that was actually compiled by a compilation of all these disparate pieces, but looked like a seamless whole. And it was all pointing to those very specific jobs. So in essence, that's the same model that we need to keep replicating. We need to figure out how to start doing it at scale. So the thing about WorkTrain, though, you think about that process. What role did we play in that? We didn't train anybody. We didn't provide any direct social services. We didn't employ them ourselves. What are we getting paid for? I don't know. What we are there to do is to create those very, very, very targeted pathways and to build infrastructure for them to function effectively. Right now, I think that there's a huge misnomer in our community that there's no good workforce development efforts. There's all this money spent, people coming away from certifications, people coming away with social services, soft skills, but nobody's getting jobs. Well, to some degree, there is a kernel of truth to that. We don't see enough outcome. We don't see the outcomes we always want to see in our workforce development system, but it's not because there aren't great things in our community along those lines. It's because they're not always aligned. And so what we are is a platform for alignment. We are a catalyst for innovation to create very targeted outcomes. I like to say that we're somewhere between a community organizer and a strategic planning consultant. Our job is to align disparate partners, get them to work together, get them to focus on a very common goal, and deliver discrete resources in support of that ultimate outcome in ways where what you're doing is creating something larger than any one organization can provide themselves. So the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Ultimately, we can kind of boil down our role into developing strategies. So, okay, we see these emerging needs in manufacturing. Here are the things we know we need to deliver to the employer. Here is this population of people, these populations of people who are potentially qualified for that, but here are the interventions that need to take place to get them there. We're getting feedback from all of our different partners in that process, and we're putting together some sort of a framework with that partner participation. We're aligning those partners. We're catalyzing the effort. Maybe we are able to leverage some dollars that are already in the system, but we can catalyze them by putting in some of the flexible capital that we have. One thing about our budget is that we've really barely spent any of it yet. We're about to spend a lot of it. But our job is to not just take all of the money that the foundations have pooled and all the other grants we've gotten and just spend it on our own capacity. It's actually about making very targeted investments to get to the outcomes that we want to get to. In some ways, we're kind of like an aggregate foundation combined with a community organizer. It's a really kind of fun role. Big thing that we're really looking at is building capacity in those places where we see a ton of potential. We'll talk about this a little bit more later, but you know, we have really had it, just in full candor, we've had a really difficult time getting candidates from the south side of Syracuse over the last several years. We've pulled from every other neighborhood in our community. We've had great results. Every time we do get south side candidates, we have great results with them too. There's nothing wrong with the south side in terms of hardworking, motivated people who want jobs. We just realized that there was a lack of organizational infrastructure on the south side that was specifically aligned with workforce. And that's not true across the board, but not robustly like it might have been in some other neighborhoods. So we turned to the south side leader who we just think the world of and who is kind of the anchor organization of the south side and Southwest Community Center. And you know, I believe when I talked to Sharon Owens at Southwest, she said that they, between all their different programs and events, see 8,000 discrete clients a year coming through that building. Well, we had an opportunity this year to get a bunch of people on a career ladder in short order, and she wasn't able to figure out how to pull together all those different pieces of her organization to find those candidates. It's, you know, it's, again, it's not that, it's the resources are there, the intentionality is there. We have to trigger it by creating the infrastructure and the process that allows for those things to happen. So one of the early interventions that we're doing is we actually have kind of worked out a partnership with Southwest. We brought Terrence on, who was already working out of the community center there, but was actually an employee of the United Way on another project. But Terrence and I go back a ways, and he gets this stuff. He's great at bridging what's happening at the grassroots level to some strategic priorities. We said, well, let's build kind of a strategic outpost on the south side to galvanize different programs and lead them to workforce opportunities. So that's something we're just literally in the first month or two of piloting that, but it's incredibly exciting, obviously, and it's really critical because if we have an entire section of our community disconnected from opportunity, that has drastic impact on our future as a community, and not just for the neighborhood. So that's something that has to change. So that's one place where we could say that building capacity. We don't need to build capacity in ourselves. We need to build capacity where the people are. So that's part of what we're trying to do. Working with the third client, I put that up there. I'm not sure if that's hard to read, but the idea here is that we talk a lot about the dual client model, but it occurred to us at one point, actually it was in a job interview that somebody said it back to us. I get more good quotes out of job interviews from people we're interviewing, that someone said, it's like you have three clients really, because you're all your partners are your clients too. Because so often what we do is we actually say, you know, let's take the Syracuse City School District, for example. They embed adult educational instructors in our workforce programming because they get great outcomes out of that. They see great job placement numbers. They see great educational gains. It's vocationalized. They have every incentive to spend some of their state ed dollars in that context. So by creating value for them, we are ultimately you know, serving their needs, but we're also building this larger strategy up. So thinking about the third client, all the different partners, whether it's the CBO, the community college, the voc ed institution, really important. How we organize this is through industry partnerships. So we talked about that before. Once we have identified a targeted industry, we turn to the employers in the industry, ask them for feedback, ask them for input, and then we assemble the different partners that are going to be necessary in delivering the intervention. That ranges from community partners to workforce systems partners, the WIB, the, you know, Jobs Plus, the Welfare to Work program, effectively, education and training partners, everyone from OCC to BOCES to the school district to SUNY EOC, critical to our future work, and business groups. So obviously Center State CEO, who can sometimes speak credibly to business and help engage them in terminology that makes sense to them. MACNY is another great example. So assembling all of them and letting the employers kind of lead the conversation, or at least provide the guiding input, and then developing multifaceted targeted interventions that meet those needs. But and having a table that doesn't just, you know, it's not just like, oh, a quick, you know, focus group. This is a table that will continue to come together time and time again to engage in continuous improvement, to make sure that demand is being met, and that, you know, that the market is being adjusted to, you know, just because one set of jobs is available today doesn't mean it's going to be available next year. So we got to monitor that. We got to keep that in place. And we need to create the platform by which all the different partners that make that solution possible are getting that feedback in real time. Real quick commentary on the National Fund for Workforce Solutions. This platform model that kind of takes our you know, philosophy and scales it to the next level, that is being done in other communities and being done very well. Started in Boston, some exemplary communities across the country, big and small. We have a special affinity to Cincinnati, Ohio, who seems to really share just our process and our interests and our kind of some personality. But, you know, everywhere from Mobile, Alabama to Seattle, Washington, and everywhere in between, there are communities that at a regional level are organizing themselves in this way to make strategic workforce investments in very targeted industry subsections. And there's a network of us, and it's the National Fund. And it's a really fantastic network because we obviously get funding, which is nice. But we also have, there's affinity groups within it. We get coaching. We have a coach who's assigned to us. We you know, there's national publicity opportunities to get in front of, for instance, the Federal Department of Labor, which Meg and I had the chance to do this summer. Political alignment. We get to share best practices. And the only thing that we're asked to do ultimately is to abide by the dual client model philosophy and to share data. So that's a, you know, and because they want to aggregate all that data on a national level and they want to create a national vocabulary. And just one kind of quick note on them is that they, their executive director, Fred Dietrich, who's pictured in the middle there with holding a, some kind of sort of award, is actually on, and for the last couple of years, has been all on all of the White House task forces with Joe Biden and company, driving educational and workforce policy. And so when you start hearing about employer-driven workforce development, no more train and pray, that's all National Fund language. So it's actually really neat to kind of see that connection. So when we started off this work, you know, you go across the country and look at these regional collaboratives. Year one is a ton of capacity building. It's how do you build the infrastructure to do this work at scale? And that's really what we've been doing a ton of work on. We've been meeting with all of our different partners from OCC to EOC to the school district to BOCES to, you know, all the community-based organizations that we work with and all the different political elements and all the different business elements, really digging into the industries. And so we were expecting to do about 6 months of that and then have some stuff up and running in early 2015. Well, in the midst of all that, we were starting to organize our healthcare industry partnership and our great partner and employer in our community, Loretto, who's, you know, employing thousands of people. Kim Townsend, their executive director, said, I've been hearing about this. I've been hearing about Health Train from St. Joe's. We're so excited to be a part of it, and we need it now. We need to hire 100 CNAs within the next 6 to 12 months, or else we're in big financial trouble. Is there anything we can do right away? And so we went back. We talked it over as a staff. We called Meg. We called Frank. We called Rob Simpson. And within 3 days, we had mobilized a Health Train at a scale that we had never experienced. And within 2 months, had put 35 CNAs in the door. And since that time, I think we're up to a little over 50 at this point. We actually have a few people going through the HR process right now. But there was a critical need that was, you know, first of all, a great opportunity for many people in our community to get on a living wage career pathway, but also to create great value in a very difficult situation for an employer. So we said, you know, what's this thing worth if we can't do that, right? So we kind of disrupted our planning and jumped into that. And it was actually great. You know, it was not easy and it was not smooth because the speed to delivery was so fast, but we learned a ton. It's informing how we move ourselves forward. And so in some ways, it was probably the best thing that could have happened. And so we're now digging into how do you sustain this thing and build it out for the long term. We'll be launching a healthcare initiative. Our healthcare industry partnership is in formation. We're launching our first initiative in healthcare this spring with a few kind of companion initiatives in the queue. And so it's really important to say that, you know, we're not just launching one program in any particular industry. We're looking at multiple programs. So in healthcare, we're starting with kind of doing what we did before, getting entry-level workers kind of on the ladder. But then we're going to be, you know, working with various partners, OCC and others, to figure out, okay, now you're on the ladder. How do you create targeted training opportunities to get them up the ladder? So retention advancement strategies. But then there's also some some really critical needs in the workforce that might need a little bit of a higher skill individual that just bypasses that whole process altogether. Huge nursing shortage right now in our community. Medical billing and coding is this huge emerging need, so we're really kind of taking a look at all those pieces. Yes, I'm already looking ahead, even though the slide doesn't say so. So that's what we're doing. We're doing capacity building at Southwest Community Center. We're also doing a lot of work right now in developing, I think, a really, really critical strategic partnership with On Point for Jobs. We're not quite sure how that's playing out yet, but we know that they're going to be really relevant in our work moving forward. We're also looking at something that is very important to the National Fund because it's very important to sustaining this work, which is system alignment and systems change. Systems change really just means tweaking aspects of the system, whether it be at the educational level or the employer level or the community-based level, to become better aligned with a dual client model. And so there's all kinds of things that can mean. One example right now is that David Goodness and his colleagues at the Workforce Development Institute are pushing a really critical child care bill that will increase the number of community residents who are eligible for a child care subsidy so they can get to work. Huge barrier, very limited resources to kind of create a larger pool of resources to accommodate a broader swath of the community has truly profound implications. So we're going to come out in full support as Center State CEO and work train of that bill, put it on our lobbying agenda at Center State. We're helping kind of we're working with his team locally to kind of help organize. Working a lot with SEIU 1199 to kind of figure out all the mechanics of it right now. But part of the beauty of this initiative is, when would you ever hear SEIU 1199 and Center State CEO in the same sentence? It's really about creating common ground for all these disparate players, and it's really exciting. So I think, safe to say, we have a lot of work to do, but we feel very confident in our approach and very confident in the partners that we have to work with us. One partner I'll point out in particular is OCC. OCC and Dr. Crable and her new Director of Workforce Development, Mike Metzger, changing the way that OCC does business in the community, becoming not just relevant, but hyperactive in the workforce field, which is such a critical opportunity for Syracuse, to have the community college substantively involved in the workforce development system is a wonderful, wonderful thing. So, I think that, we just have a wealth of talent. We have a wealth of partners. And the one thing I really want to say is that when I talk about a wealth of talent, we have a wealth of talent sitting in the different organizations across the community doing good things, we're trying to align. We also have a wealth of talent in our community. We have never run a program in 6 years where we have had more spaces and training and jobs on the back end than qualified workers. When we said, hey, we need to fill, up to 100 slots at Loretto, and we need to do it now, we sent out the call to our community partners, and in 2 weeks we had 188 applicants. We were able to take 35 people. We had 70 people that we thought were qualified. There are hungry people in every part of this community for work, and so that is why this is so important, because we cannot sustain our future if we don't figure out how to engage them. So that's why this is important, and we really appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. Thank you.
Nice job.
Thank you, Dominic. I'm constantly struck, again, going back to Onondaga Citizens League studies, and certainly Meg can attest to this in the last year with our early childhood, that very often with complex problems that have been around a long time and supposedly solutions and initiatives have been out there, so much of it comes down to communication and coordination, kind of getting all of the pieces. And even though some of those kind of systems, I think of it very organically, where all of our parts are there and they're working, but if they're not working together, then we're not going to be able to move and get one foot in front of the other. But I know there are a lot of people in the room who are who have questions. So here's one. An employer.
Yes, I am an employer. And we have started using temp agencies to bring people on. Almost entirely. We've raised our minimum wage considerably within the last month, but the temp agencies tend to help us weed out those who are going to stay and those who are not. But as the HR director, my biggest concern and problem is, and Dominic addressed it somewhat, is that most of these people need good financial counseling or places to go to, because you'll have a new hire who comes in, and within 2 weeks of the time they have a job, I have a letter from the state. I have garnishments on their wages. We have national medical support orders. They're so in debt that they say, why, it's not worth it to me to work.
Yes.
And I don't know how you stop this, but somehow or another, either somebody has to hold off on these things for a month or two and let them get some salary built up. Now, they can only 50% of their wage can be taken from it.
Yeah.
But it's a major problem that I'm not seeing addressed.
So I can address that quickly and just say that I don't know if we're addressing it fully. But what we have done and are doing is embedding financial counseling and financial literacy in all of our workforce programs, because we see it as being such a ubiquitous challenge and critical area of importance. So we have a great partner in our community, Syracuse Cooperative Federal Credit Union. They do a fantastic financial literacy workshop, and they have really great staff that do a lot of financial counseling. But what we've seen is, you know, you get people in, you start doing credit repair and debt mitigation, and start creating match savings programs. Sometimes people are not in such bad shape, and we actually kind of start working on money management and get them enrolled in match savings accounts and first-time homebuyer programs and all that kind of stuff. But it's just a great example of the need for alignment of these disparate strategies. And so when you talk about working with a temp agency, I think you know, our interest is in actually working with temp agencies to create a better pipeline of qualified workers and ultimately foster situations that help people garner sustainable employment. I think, you know, to ask a lot of employers to just get rid of the temp agency model is not realistic. So we actually have to figure out how do we use them as an organizing tool, but how do we surround that resource with all the other things that are going to be necessary to foster success.
Right.
Could I also comment? One other thing about that's really interesting, that you see some of these larger national funds, is they also get into to public advocacy and system change, mm-hmm. either on the state or local level. Dominic referenced, you know, the child care issues and how to change that. And you saw one of our partners at the table is the county. They're very conscious of the fact that people, it's not always beneficial for them to work. I mean, if they have young children, then it's kind of this cliff where they drop off when they start to work. I mean, that would be great when we could get to that point where we could also start to do some type of advocacy, and that really does get to the system change. That's one of those issues.
You did address the transportation in some method, but when you have a major factory out near the airport, there is no transportation. Right. And we do hire, and we are almost always hiring, but I see these guys walking for miles.
Yep. To find a bus. Transportation is definitely the next issue. I know that WorkTrain is trying to address it. The Citizens League is going to study it next, and we'll have some thoughts for you also.
One tip I might give to your workers is that those people who make under $53,000 can get help from an organization like PEACE. I see Melissa Heideck here, who does an earned income tax credit program. They file taxes for free, so they don't have to go to the private companies. And again, it's under $53,000, and you'd be surprised how many people can get back $2,000, $3,000. Last year, I think PEACE brought in about $3.9 million to the community doing that program. It's one of the best anti-poverty programs we have in the country, mm-hmm. the Earned Income Tax Credit Program.
Another piece of the puzzle. Dominic, you alluded to the fact that you're working on now the career ladder in the health careers. And certainly we know in this community, we've talked about the eds and meds for a lot of years. We know that they are the growing industry. We have major hospitals in the center of the city. Read the New York Times. it's national. We're become a nurse, it sounds like. But beyond that, so how do you identify other kinds of occupations, because there's a common, all right, we need lots of CNAs, nursing assistants, we need, you know, so many RNs, the training, almost everybody has a different twist on how the OJT part of it, how that organization works, but with others, I'm not sure exactly what job titles Gene has at Feldmeyer, but are there enough of other kinds of jobs so that you can do this kind of group training? It's my understanding that's always been the problem.
Absolutely. No, there is. In fact, I mean, you know, one of the unique things we have going for us are really there's three things that I would just say first around being predictive of opportunity. One is that we have a great relationship with our State Department of Labor and our regional rep, Juanita Perez Williams. And obviously they have a lot of really good data coming out of there. We also have the fortune of getting to share probably the best demand aggregator technology on the market called Burning Glass. OCC has a license. It's essentially a spidering technology that takes every posted job online and sorts them by industry, by region, and really helps you kind of get a real-time sense for where those things are. And then we happen to be, and this is the real value add for the WorkTrain team, is we are embedded in Center State CEO. We are the largest employer group in the region, over 2,000 members in every industry. And so we hear real-time feedback from those employers about what their needs are. So when you look at the challenge, it's not about demand, it's about demand aggregation. Healthcare is not without its challenges, but relatively low-hanging fruit. Large employers, centrally located with defined career ladders. Couldn't ask for much more than that. Obviously, it's a great place to start. When you look at manufacturing, we actually have a really robust manufacturing economy. It's just that there are 50 to 100 person employers mostly. You know, they're not the carriers of yesteryear, the GMs of yesteryear. So how do you cluster them based upon kind of general areas of need? How do you create targeted strategies, whether they're geographic clustering or by kind of horizontal career needs horizontal occupational needs? And so that aggregation is the real challenge. But I could say that manufacturing is there's a ton of jobs in manufacturing right now. IT, financial services, you know, this emerging market around data management. Those are all areas that we're driving into. Not to mention, you know, what you know, for better or for worse, is the fastest growing market in Syracuse, which is the service sector and hospitality and things like that. And so, those jobs aren't without merit too. So, you know, our job over time is to kind of look at all those and try to build platforms into each of those. Obviously, we're starting, you know, one foot in front of the other, but that's, I think, how we would view that.
Good. All right. Question over here.
Dominic, I was wondering, I know you mentioned you're in the sort of the building process and doing a lot of the infrastructure. In the long term, do you have some goals for outcomes assessment? How many people are you hoping to place in jobs in a given year?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that... you know, those projected data sets are a little bit tricky when you're really focused on demand in the market. You know, it's one thing to kind of arbitrarily say, you know, oh, we want to place 1,000 people in jobs over the next however many years. But like, you know, so much of that is predicated on the industries we're in and what that demand is and how we can kind of build that up. But I think that, you know, first of all, basic outcome metrics are obviously, you know, people that we can have complete some sort of industry recognized training, place them in jobs, see them retained in those jobs after, you know, benchmarks of 3, 6, 12 months and beyond, and then advance in their industries or into other positions. There's a lot of other kind of more broadly, you know, system change and impact metrics that we're looking at too, but in the clear line of thinking, those are the places we're looking at. As far as what we kind of are looking for, I think by next year, we would like to see somewhere between 150 to 200 people coming out of WorkTrain-sponsored initiatives and being placed into career pathways. But I think that is not representative of the long-term potential. So I think, you know, if we really get this thing humming and have it built, you know, it could be several hundred people in a year that, you know, with a little bit more resources, I think we're kind of getting to a place where we have a true resource base that can foster a lot of stuff. We'll be able to see you know, a significant enough number of people coming through these processes to where you're going to start seeing some statistical impact possibly in the economy. But it's going to take a little while to get there.
Dominic, you mentioned that one of the partners is, or anybody actually, Meg, Frank, among your many partners is CNY works in the Workforce Investment Board. And can you kind of explain, the Workforce Investment Board sounds like it's a board of people who talk about where to invest workforce training dollars. So how does that group fit in to the collaborative?
Frank or Dominic?
They fit in very well. I'll take a stab, and if Frank wants to add anything. I mean, so first of all, the Workforce Investment Board is a board, but they also then manage CNY Works, which is effectively the one stop for Syracuse, which means they're the one stop shop for people who are unemployed. And so that means that there's job searching capacity, there's resume writing, career navigation, and a pot of funding that people can access training at times. So clearly a relevant partner. I think that the most important thing to say is that they are much larger in their scope than we are. They're really mandated to serve anyone who is qualified to get their services who comes to their door. What we, I think, our best position to do what we've done in the past is leverage all their services that they provide to their clients, crystallize opportunities for them that they can refer them into, and suggest areas where they can make good investments in their workers. Can you put money into a OCC program that we know is aligned with a job on the back end, or a BOCES program that we know is employer-driven, and really kind of recommend that those are investments that are going to be wise because we know that they have outcomes attached to them. So our job, as we see it, is really to be additive to them, and yet ultimately they're on a much larger scale. They have a much different mandate. They're kind of on the supply side, and we are effectively on the demand side. So in some ways, it's a great symbiotic relationship, but. But yeah, I think that's kind of how we're hoping to make it work.
Okay, thank you. Do we have a quick question?
Your reputation precedes you, Lynn.
Well, this is an example of a wonderful program that we hear many of. But I'm curious about how does something like this get further institutionalized within the governments that are responsible for serving this? And your question, Sandra, was a perfect one. Your numbers, I mean, it's very impressive. It's very difficult work to have a couple hundred people coming out of this program. But as you mentioned, the demand is much, much greater. How do we get this institutionalized in a competent way in governments locally?
Easy question.
We'll let the guy who's served in government.
I know.
That's a great question. One of the things that we saw from our perch on all of this was we talk about partnerships, we talk about collaborations, we talk about working together. I'm convinced, after too many years to count, that the only way we're going to engage people in really meaningful collaboration is actually to get in and do something. We have the county as a partner, and I think we've got Ann Rooney at the steering committee level that's been a great partner. We've got Ben Walsh from the City Economic Development Office as a partner. Again, making sense with Ann on the social services side, which is county responsibility, and Ben on the economic development side, which is bringing in the business. So that notion of the dual client is there. We also have CNY Works at the table taking care of the supply side. So it's only getting them together to do this, whether it's in this, whether it's in transportation or housing is right on the heels, if you haven't seen or heard about this in our community, is one of the really top issues. So I think it's doing it rather than talking about it. And I hope that, as Dominic alluded, and I'm surprised nobody asked, because I know this is a regionally mindful group, I'm hoping the next thing we can do with all of this is take it regional and start to talk to some of our adjacent counties about this. Because I'm convinced, and I don't want to speak for the employer back there, but I don't think you care if the people are from Cayuga County or Oswego County or Cortland County, as long as they're good employees. That's what you want. And so we really would like to begin to talk about how we can do this on a more regional basis, too, with our employers. One thing, though, before I miss out, I do want to thank Bob Falter and Peter Dunn, Bob from the Reisman Foundation and Peter from Community Foundation. Remember, I said United Way said we would take $100,000, but when we went out looking for partners, we really found people in the community that were willing to sit down. And again, do that sort of thing. I think we got to do that with government, with lots of other things. And, we got to call the question with them rather than just talking about it. I think doing it is much better. I admired Tom Menino, who just passed away, who was the mayor of Boston. And he had a great quote. He was a very humble man. And he said, you know, I was never a visionary. They didn't get anything done. And I thought that was pretty humorous coming from him, because he got a lot done, because he really said, look, we can have the vision, but we got to get in there and start doing it. We're I think, pleased, both Meg and I, Peter and Bob, that we got somebody like Dominic that can really get in there and get it done.
Thank you. Thanks, Frank Lazarski, Dominic Robinson, Meg O'Connell.